Welcome to Grow It Minnesota, the podcast about growing fruit, vegetables, flowers, and anything else in a cold, cold climate. I'm Mary Shear, a home gardener and author of the book, The Northern Gardener, From Apples to Zinnias. On this program, we talk to some of the best gardeners in the Midwest so you can grow a more productive, beautiful garden no matter the weather. Let's get on to today's guest. Well, welcome back, everybody, to Grow It Minnesota. We were on a short hiatus the last couple of weeks as I got my garden all together. But we're in June, and it's the month of roses. And today my guest is Dr. David Zlesak, who is a professor of horticulture at the University of Wisconsin in River Falls, got his PhD at the University of Minnesota. He's a very established and well-known plant hybridizer and has developed cultivars of nine bark, including Little Devil, which I know a lot of people have in their yard, Ageratum, Heliopsis, and especially roses, which I think might be his favorite plant. And that's what we're going to talk about today. So David has been a leader in the movement toward developing and highlighting sustainable rose varieties. So David, thank you so much for joining me. And let's start out by defining what you consider, what are the characteristics of a sustainable rose?
Great. First of all, great to be with you, Mary, and all the listeners. So for a sustainable rose, I want a rose that is disease resistant to the common diseases in our region. So as we think about sustainability, we have to think in terms of a region and the typical pressures that the plants experience, be it diseases, insects, climate, such as our winter being really harsh. So I think of a sustainable rose as one that comes back year after year, flowers, survives, provides beauty to that landscape without a lot of extra Herculean care. So enough disease resistance, enough hardiness that it comes back strong. Maybe once in a while, after a tough winter, it might get knocked back a little harder. You know, maybe there's a disease outbreak after maybe a long period of excessive rain, but it rebounds. So the only way to really understand which roses have those characteristics is to plant them out and watch them in our climate for multiple seasons and see which ones rise to the top and prove themselves as regionally adapted.
Right. And that's where it's the American Rose Trials for Sustainability. It's called, do you call it ARTS or ARTS? What's the
Great question. So I typically just refer to it as ARTS. So we have, you know, roses bring beautiful, you know, beauty to our landscape. So there's definitely an artistic component. So I love calling it ARTS.
Yeah. So the ARTS program, I know they work regionally, and we have a bunch of places in Minnesota or in the north that are regional test sites. How does that program work?
Yeah, great question. So I'm on the hybridizers committee, so I reach out to breeders and nurseries around the country and tell them about the program and encourage them to enter their roses. So in spring, various breeders will send their roses to all these sites across the whole nation. So the same roses are tested across the whole nation. However, the awards are given regionally because we know that a rose isn't perfect everywhere because there's so many different climatic conditions and disease pressures. So the roses are planted at all these sites, typically botanical gardens that are partnering with the program, sometimes municipalities and park systems. And these plants are planted out in a scientific manner. So they're replicated, they're spaced well. There's typically compost added if the organic matter is not high enough pre-plant. And then an organic mulch layer is maintained throughout the study. And that's what provides all the nutrition for the plants. They're watered to get them established, but that's about it. So beyond that, they have to prove themselves as being able to tolerate and perform well with our regional pressures. After 2 years of trialing, the roses that score equal to or better than the average of the two control or nursery industry standards that we plant in every trial earn an award. So our two industry standards are Sunrise Sunset and Double Knockout. So it's a very transparent way to determine awards. It strips away, you know, any political components. So a rose just has to earn it. We might have no roses some years in a region win, and other years a whole handful.
Yeah. So just to, you know, confirm or reiterate on the trials themselves. So there's no spraying. There's no fungicide. There's no extra bloom booster rose type fertilizer. It's just compost and a decent amount of water, right?
That's right. Yep. And so the only time when we prune is the spring of the second year, just to get rid of any winter kill. Otherwise, we want to see what the natural plant form is, if there's ornamental fruits, the rose hips. And so we trial them in a very low input way. We're giving them what they ultimately need, nutrition and water. But beyond that, they have to prove that they have enough pest resistance and regional adaptability for our climate.
Lots of tough love there. So where in Minnesota would the roses be trialed? I mean, where would we find them here?
Yeah, so Randy Nelson, who's an extension educator in Clay County, hosts a trial over there in Moorhead. So that's western Minnesota. And then we have a couple more trials in eastern Wisconsin in our region. So that's where the official trials are for our northern region.
Right. So one of them is pretty far north. Is the Moorhead site in zone 3 or is still zone 4? It's kind of on the border.
It's on the border. Yeah, so some years it delves into zone 3.
So those are very cold hardy roses that are doing well there. I know from writing about this in Northern Gardener magazine that there's at least 20 local artists. That's what the winning roses are called, local artist roses. I think there were 14 in 2020, and then they added some more. Do you have any favorites among these local artist roses?
Oh yeah, they're all beautiful in their own right. So they've proven themselves in terms of, you know, being able to survive and do well in our climate. So beyond that, a lot of it is personal preference, and then some are maybe a little more cold hardy than others. So in our trials, since we're not pushing them with, you know, fertilizer, they harden off well, and mm-hmm. and they tend to maybe be a little more winter hardy than somebody that's giving them nitrogen all the way to, you know, fall. So our trialing method helps in terms of strengthening their winter hardiness. But some of my favorites are Music Box, which is part of the Easy Elegant series. I love the plant habit. It's a beautiful, rounded, mounded plant that gets about waist high, and it has these blooms all around the perimeter. So wonderful display, and they're a creamy yellow as they open, and then they get beautiful highlights of pink where the sun hits them. I love that one. Miracle on the Hudson is a semi-double, beautiful, rich red. It's bred out of Knockout. Knockout is its grandparent, and Knockout is a wonderful rose, but it's a little marginal for hardiness for us. So I love to think of Miracle on the Hudson as a Knockout, you know, counterpart that's a little more winter hardy and reliable for us. I love Head Over Heels, which is a new winner for 2022. And it's from Bailey Nurseries, and it's a compact cluster flowered rose. Each blooms about 2 inches across, and it's a beautiful lavender pink. And I smell a wonderful fragrance. Not everybody smells fragrances the same, right? But at least to my nose, I just love that fragrance. And at least to me, it smells kind of musky. And I just love that. There's so many beautiful ones, of course. And a new one to the marketplace, and it's also a 2022 winner, is one called the Champion Sunblush Rose. And that one goes through a stronger color transition than Music Box. It opens up a more clear yellow. It's a single. And then within a day, it turns to a beautiful magenta pink. So the next morning is new yellow ones open with the magenta pink ones from the days before. It's spectacular.
Wow. And was that one trialed up like in Dilworth? It was trialed in the Northern Minnesota trials?
It was. Yep. Yeah, it's a great rose. It was bred in part by Will Rattler, the breeder of the Knockout series, who lives in the Milwaukee area.
But now, this doesn't mean the roses will get no disease, right? If they're a local artist, they still may get black spot or whatever, right?
Yeah, that's true. So, I do a lot of black spot research with different strains of the fungus, and we're identifying different disease resistance genes. So there's no rose that's completely immune. So the hope or goal is that we identify those roses that have a high enough tolerance and resistance that even if the conditions are perfect for a while and they get some black spot when the humidity goes down and there's some time between rains, hopefully they'll have enough time to recover. So if we plant our roses in at least 6 hours of full sun or more and give them, you know, the water and nutrition that they need, that'll give them a fighting chance to continue to grow and be beautiful additions to our landscape. There's no plant that's, you know, totally perfect that nothing ever comes and gets. But we're trying to identify those roses that are well above average and then recommend those that through data from our region, people could think with this perspective that given basic plant care, they'll be highly likely to be successful with these roses because they've already proven themselves in our region.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about some of the basic care regime. So you're planting the rose. Are there any particular tricks to planting or to spacing your roses?
Yeah, great question. So they love the same wonderful soil that our vegetables love as well. So so if your soil is low in organic matter, it's good to add some. Have a soil test done through the University of Minnesota. Know what you're starting with. You can save a lot of money, actually, if you just have a soil test done and know what your soil needs and doesn't need versus just buying expensive, you know, magic formulas that keep throwing stuff that your plants may not even need. So whenever you start a new garden, have a soil test done so you know what you're working with. You know, typically, you know, adding organic matter never hurts. And then beyond that, as we plant our roses, if we could plant the crown a little bit deeper in the soil, that gives us a buffer. So that's something that we don't want to do with trees.
Right.
Because we'll get stem girdling roots, but these shrubs, it's okay. So if the rabbits come and chew them off down to the ground during the winter, at least you have some buds for that rose to come back from. And most of the landscape roses, even many of the other like hybrid tea roses, are beginning to be grown on root. So that means that they're not grafted, a cutting's rooted. And then whatever sprouts from the base of the plant is still our rose of choice. Part of the driving force behind that is that it's harder to find people willing to graft out in the hot sun in Arizona and California compared to years ago. But for us, it's a good thing because on-root roses are wonderful because whatever sprouts back from the base is our rose. It isn't that rootstock. So planting a little deeper gives us a buffer.
Okay, so how deep is a little deeper? So I know with a tree you plant, it's kind of right at ground level, so you can see the little splay out. With a rose, would you go an inch deeper or 2 inches? How deep would you put the crown?
I go about 3 inches, and
okay,
and then
so pretty deep then.
Yeah, and then what happens over time is this: they'll produce some roots off of those stems. So they'll adjust themselves basically to where they want their roots to be. And then what happens over time then is that if they do get knocked back or something bad happens, you have some buds under the soil for them to rebound from. And then if you ever dig up that rose in the future, So if the patent's expired, you could have your plant and you could chop it up into sections wherever there's some rooted section, and you could actually multiply it a little bit. So those are some outcomes from planting a little deep.
And then that first year, how much would you want to water, you know, the rows? Because I know with trees and shrubs, you just generally do want to give them some pretty good watering the first year.
Yeah, same thing for the roses. And right now we're in this, you know, crazy long heat spell. I'm out there. I transplanted lots of roses because I redid some beds, and I'm watering them a lot of sandy soil too. So that leads to even more watering than if I had a heavier loam soil. So based on your soil type, the temperature, you just want to make sure that those roses, that the roots can get enough water, but then you also want that water to drain so they can get some oxygen so they can respire and actually grow. So they need oxygen down in there to use all that wonderful stored energy from photosynthesis to grow. So we don't want them in a solid puddle. We don't want them dried out. We want them at that happy medium. And so depending on your soil and the conditions, you know, maybe every other day, maybe every few days, maybe once a week, maybe if we get enough rain, you know, Mother Nature takes care of it. So keep an eye out and water if needed.
So, and given we are the day that David and I are recording this, it's going to be 97 degrees and it'll be the eighth day in a row of 90 plus temperatures here in Minnesota. So when it's super hot, is there anything you should do, whether it's an established rose or a new rose? I mean, other than water pretty regularly?
That's a wonderful question. So, this heat is putting our roses and other plants to the test. So if it's a woody plant and there was some marginal winter injury, some vascular damage in the stems, we're going to see it because they're not going to be able to keep up with the water demand, the water that's evaporating off of their leaves, and they'll get really wilty. So whatever we can do to keep that supply of water going, because that's what's going to cool off our plants through transpiration. We have perspiration, they have transpiration. So keep that water flow going so they could be relatively cool. And when it's really hot like this and I have so many beds, I typically, you know, love to water in the early morning, right? So less water evaporates because the sun's not, you know, warming up that water, and it just evaporates if I'm doing overhead sprinkling. You know, it dries off relatively quickly as the sun comes out to keep the foliage dry. But in conditions like this, and I have so many beds and I just have one hose, I'm just moving that hose all day long.
Yeah. Roses, do you try to put the water at the root level as opposed to, you know, doing it from, you know, on all the leaves and from above? Is there a difference in that, or is it just marginal how much difference there is?
So in the rose trials, we encourage the sites to use drip irrigation just to, you know, not encourage extra disease. But if you have a large bed, an integrated bed with lots of other plants, and it just doesn't make sense to get a drip system in there, you know, overhead might be the only thing you can do. But if you're doing it by hand and have a water wand and could direct the water to the base of the plant, you know, that's even better. So whenever possible, direct the water to the soil, less will evaporate, more will get to your plants, and your foliage will be drier and help discourage disease.
Yeah. So one other rose problem, and I know this is not a problem everywhere in Minnesota, are Japanese beetles. They can really torment those of us in the Twin Cities. Though I know up in Duluth, I was on a garden tour and they didn't even hardly know what they were. So where is the line on Japanese beetles in Minnesota? Or is it just city by city, area by area? And how do we deal with them?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. A friend of mine in Ortonville, Minnesota, he doesn't have any yet either. He's on the South Dakota border. And They're slowly moving west, right? So if I remember the story right, they were in New England in the 1940s or so, and they're just progressively moving west. And sometimes we can get a pocket that starts as kind of a jump, just because some plants were brought somewhere, maybe with some soil, and they pupate in the ground, and then they emerge, and you get a pocket that's kind of disjunct from, you know, the natural moving line of them. So, Japanese beetles are, you know, really voracious and they eat a lot of plant material. So as I think about roses, I think then, well, I really need the hardiest roses because they're going to bloom off those overwintered stems before the Japanese beetles come. So I can get that first bloom under my belt. And then after that, as they come, some years are worse than others. I have a lot of Japanese beetles here in River Falls, Wisconsin, and in the Twin Cities, we have a lot too. So in recent years, they're going down a little bit in a lot of areas. At Lindale Park Rose Garden by Lake Harriet, they identified winsome flies, and that's a natural predator of Japanese beetles. They lay their egg on the back of the Japanese beetle. The larva start and burrow into the insect, and that's a predator that has been following them from the East Coast. So they're here now, which is great. People use milky spore, which is wonderful. I believe it's Bacillus thuringiensis. And you spread that on your lawn because after they eat, they lay their eggs and then the larvae live in, well, they're irrigated turf the rest of the season. Even corn fields do. But so that'll get them at that stage. But not everybody's using milky spore and the adults could fly for 5 miles. So you're contributing to the greater good, but likely your neighbor's Japanese beetles after they emerge will come visit your garden. So you might not be reducing the numbers too much in your garden.
Right. And Japanese beetle traps, yay or nay?
I used to work in extension at University of Minnesota. And from what I learned from Dr. Kirchick and Jeff Hahn is that they draw more in than they catch. So the pheromones that get released and draw them in, and maybe a lot of them just get distracted. And then they see your plants and then they ignore that pheromone for a little bit and just start eating your plants. Unless you're putting it far away on your neighbor's, so it's dropping them over there.
Yes, your neighbor's lawn is the place to put the Japanese beetle trap. Yeah. So you mentioned getting roses that will bloom before the beetles come out. So these are some of these hardy ones that are in the arts program, right? Or are there native roses? I mean, which roses would bloom before the beetles come out?
The roses that are in the arts program, some of them are hardier than others, but they've survived. And so that's great. So some are crown hardy. So they behave like a herbaceous perennial, but then they come back strong. Or they've proven themselves to come back with a lot of vigor, which is great. So they still provide a great landscape addition. And then others actually have greater cane hardiness. So some of the old classic Agriculture Canada Explorer Series are great examples of ones that have really good cane hardiness. And ones like my Above and Beyond, which has a similar genetic background. So these climbers, larger shrubs, so Frontenac, John Cabot, William Baffin, George Vancouver, John Davis, all those are ones with really strong cane hardiness. In the arts program, we monitor, take data monthly. So we want roses that bloom, provide a lot of landscape appeal, because that's what most gardeners want, which is just fantastic. But these really hardy roses, they tend to bloom really strong in the spring, maybe a little bit later. And then they know when winter is coming, and then they do a really good job at hardening off. And that's what allows them to be so hardy. But our expectations for them should be a little bit different in terms of their rebloom capacity. But so enjoy the monster show in the spring. Like right now, I love driving through town. I know where there's a gorgeous John Cabot that's just in full bloom. And every time I drive by, I look at it, I make sure that I'm safe and there are too many cars too close to me. And I just admire it.
I mean, are you saying, think of it a little bit like a peony in that you don't expect it to look fabulous all summer long? It's not an annual. You just expected to have a beautiful bloom. Years ago, I grew Sir Thomas Lipton, like a really old rose. But in the spring, that guy was gorgeous for a little while. Then he was green the rest of the time.
So. We forgive common lilacs for blooming for 2 weeks in the spring, and we love them. Sir Thomas Lipton, Lillian Gibson, these others. Can we forgive them if they bloom for only a month, a few weeks to a month? I think so.
Yeah. So a lot of it is just expectation and planning your garden to have moments of wonderfulness from different plants.
Yeah. So plant a Mannerly clematis with your big William Baffin rose or Above and Beyond, and let those blooms, you know, come throughout them a little bit later in the summer.
Yeah. So those are gorgeous. So are we seeing, I know a lot of people are interested in native plants now. Are we seeing less interest in roses? Which I know we have some native roses in Minnesota, but you know, where is the interest level with gardener, home gardeners with roses?
Yeah, that's a really good question. It decreased for a while. And part of that is just that the rose industry suffered a bit from the downturn in the economy about a decade ago, and then there were less players, and more of the sales were diverted to box stores over the years, and they, you know, don't always water their plants as faithfully as my independent garden center sometimes, and so, you know, in terms of the supply chains and maintenance issues at the garden centers, those factors came together and just made roses a little less popular for a while, but their popularity is actually increasing right now. So that's wonderful. There's a lot of players coming into the marketplace. So for instance, our local or regional, they're actually national, but Bailey Nurseries at Heather headquarters here in Minnesota, they're a nursery that grows many different kinds of plants, right? They're very comprehensive. And years ago, roses were typically grown, produced, distributed by rose-specific companies. So now these big players like Bailey's, they have their own brand, Easy Elegance. And then now Monrovia has their Grit and Grace series, another series that they're coming to the marketplace with. So these comprehensive nurseries are funneling series of roses to us, which is bringing a lot more diversity. And some of these roses are being bred by European breeders. They're looking all over the world, Canadian breeders, to get these genetics. So Ping Lim, who used to work at Bailey's and bred most of the Easy Elegance roses, during the downturn in the economy, they closed their breeding program, unfortunately. But so Ping is now working as a breeder at Altman Plants in California, and he has the True Bloom series of roses. So through Altman Plants, there's that series. The Brenda Bella series is just coming into the marketplace. So I think we're having a resurgence of a love of roses, diversity of roses, and with programs like ARTS that could help us cut through some of the marketing, can help gardeners find those roses that are most adapted to their region.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And actually, I just want to let folks know that I'm going to have several links in the show notes to articles about the ARTS program, a link to the list of roses that are local artists in our area. So you can, as David says, you know, kind of cut through all the marketing and find the roses that have been tested and proven to do really well in our area. That's wonderful. So David, thanks so much for joining me. Good luck with all those plants out in the hot sun.
Thank you so much, Mary.
If you are enjoying Grow It Minnesota, please subscribe, follow, and give us a review over on Apple Podcasts. That really helps me reach more cold climate gardeners. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with another show.